Aggressive Negotiations is sponsored by Loot Crate. Licensed collectibles for less than $20 a month. Head to lootcrate.com/nerdparty and enter code NERDPARTY for a new subscription discount.
Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Hello and welcome to Aggressive Negotiations, the Star Wars podcast that talks about the things that you wish other podcasts would explore in the Star Wars galaxy, but we're the ones brave enough to go into that territory. I'm one of your hosts, Jedi Master John Mills, and with me as always is my very good friend, Jedi Master Matthew Rushing. Matt, tell everybody how you're doing.
Doing great, John.
Excellent.
It's a fantastic time to be alive. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know about you, but where I am, the sun is shining. It is bright, cloudless day, and we're recording over Memorial Day weekend at this point, so it's just, I'm not even working. So it's fantastic.
That is fantastic. And the thing is, I got to be honest, it's been nowhere to go except upward ever since the invention of the remote control for television for me. So it's just a continued upward climb.
Ooh, yeah. I mean, I was going to say individually, you know, wrap slices of cheese, but, you know, there you go.
Okay. That is a true technological achievement that I enjoy. I got to be, whoa. But before we get into today's topic, which we know everybody's going to love, there's one thing I want to say, and I want to address. We do get feedback on our Facebook forum on the Nerd Party page, facebook.com/thenerdparty, because we are a proud member of the Nerd Party Network. But there was a minor historical fact going back to our show about alternate directors for Attack of the Clones. I cited George P. Cosmatos for having directed Tombstone and said he would have been a great choice because of, you know, blah, 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 all of the reasons I gave. One of our listeners, in fact, corrected me and said that even though Cosmatos got the credit for it, it was actually Kurt Russell who was primarily behind the camera on that.
Hmm.
So I'm going to retroactively correct my choice and say Kurt Russell should have been in consideration for directing
Attack
of the Clones, which would have truly, if you think about it, been a wonderful thing because Kurt Russell was in the running for playing Han Solo
in
the original film.
Yeah.
So how cool would that have been? But all of that aside, what we are going to be covering is actually something that I think is a lot of fun, which is we're going to be highlighting our favorite side characters, secondary characters in the great lore of Star Wars. And just so everybody knows, Matt, do you want to take them through how we're defining side character for this week's conversation?
I think we're defining side character as somebody who is always secondary to a main character. So Captain Rex, love Captain Rex, but I wouldn't call him a main character. He is a side character because he's always next to one of our other main characters like Anakin or Obi-Wan,
right,
or even Ahsoka at that point. So, you know, they may even be a little bit more prominent, but they're always a side character. I think of the best way to describe it, Star Trek Deep Space Nine has a lot of side characters that feel like main characters, like a Rom or a General Martok or a Garrick, or,
yeah,
you know, you think these characters are actually on the show more than they are, but they're not. They are side characters. So, you know, when you look at Star Wars, there are so many of them that you come to love, but they are truly side characters.
Yes, I completely agree. And to kick off the conversation, I have a feeling that you just mentioned somebody who's on both of our lists, and that is
Maybe.
The great Captain Rex. I mean,
yes.
You got to love the Captain Rex. Huge fanboy, fangirling moment when he was brought back into Rebels. And he has had, to speak to your point, his arc is always tied in with the major hero's arc. Even though he's been brought into mm-hmm. Rebels, he's not a main character. He's in support of our main space family in Rebels.
Yes.
And so I guess it's safe to say he is on both of our lists. He's sort of, I think that for most, would you agree, for most Star Wars fans, he would be a given to be on a list like this, right?
You know, I would think so. just because of the amount of depth that you do end up getting with him as a character, the things that Rex goes through. You think of the clone arcs that you get throughout the series. Most of them revolve around Rex, you know, and his growing. And I think what was so cool about Rex is there was this clear line that you were seeing as he was kind of growing into a full individual and not just, you know, a clone, lock, stock, and barrel with the rest of the clones. He had his own mind. He became his own man. And, mm-hmm. you know, how he wasn't a part of the 501st when Anakin marches on the temple is still a story we don't know. What caused Rex to not be there, but also make the decision to turn another way, you know? So there's still so much about him we don't know that is very interesting, and I'm hoping that Rebels will finally give us a little bit of that background, or maybe do a comic about it or a novel or something.
Oh, please. How great would it be to bring in Christy Golden, who gave us the absolutely terrific Dark Disciple, and have her come in and give some sort of story? I mean, I don't mm-hmm. think that Rebels is the platform to truly give Rex's rich missing backstory. I would love it if they if they gave him a novel. I completely agree with you.
Well, and it could be that he might show up in the Ahsoka novel that they're going to do. It could be that he's a big part of that storyline that's going to happen in that novel. So I wouldn't be surprised, in fact, to see that happen, which, again, I would be fine with, especially if he's showing up with you know, with the great Ahsoka and them telling that backstory of how they survived and why they survived and what they did and all of that, I just think would be phenomenal. So, Rex is just incredible.
Keeping in the vein of the Clone Wars, I'm going to go ahead and I'll give one of my choices, because I think I've, in various multiple forums that you and I have appeared in, I think that I've given sort of nonstop love to this character. Another character which has come back and appeared in Rebels, which is Hondo Ohnaka.
Oh, yes.
Hondo is, I think, a given. He is so much fun. He is one of those side characters that, for me, speaks to a Lucas-like sense of the joy of it all. He's, you know, there's a real arc behind him, but at the same time, he's not a... This is going to come out wrong, but he's not a serious character. Like, you know that when Hondo shows up on screen, it's going to be fun. Like, he's just, you know, even though there's weight to his story. So I would be curious, would Hondo have made your list as well?
Hondo is at the top of the list. He's the first person I thought of.
Excellent.
Because I think he is kind of the ultimate side character that, you know, when he comes in. One of the nice things is you don't know what he's going to do. I mean, think of the Younglings arc in, you know, he's the villain for a lot of that. And then he turns into the hero in the end. And so he's kind of always all over the place. And that's what makes him so fun. He truly is a character. It just depends on what his mood is that day. You know, is he in the mood for profit or is he in the mood to be a friend? You don't know. So, but you kind of like him either way. And that's what makes him so enjoyable to watch. You know, I think of when he showed up in the Onderon arc, you know, with the missiles that Obi-Wan and Anakin, they knew, we need somebody disreputable, somebody who can pass blockade lines. Who's that going to be? Ah, Hondo Ohnaka, you know?
Right.
So, and when he's like, oh, it's time for me to go, you know, it's just, it's fantastic.
Yeah. You know what? I love that, because I think that you hit on something that I really enjoy about his character, especially in a cartoon sort of setting. I can't remember the character's name, but it was a Hanna-Barbera cartoon where it was always exit stage right. You know, like that's Hondo's style, is like he always just zipped out of there as soon as he was done. But okay. So we have congruence on Captain Rex and Hondo. Who else is there for you?
I love Dex from Dex's Diner.
Yeah. Also on my list. Yes.
Yeah. You know, because I love that scene. What I love is that it does a few different things. It shows that Obi-Wan is somebody who really is in touch with a whole different side of the population than a lot of the other Jedi, in the same vein as Qui-Gon was. You know, what Obi-Wan would have thought of as another pathetic life form, I think has become somebody he realizes that he can trust, that he needs to have in his life. Like, he needs to have his finger on the pulse of the rest of the galaxy and not just this, you know, civilized You know, so that I think speaks to just the character of Obi-Wan. But Dex himself was just such a fun character. He seemed to be somebody who had been there, done that, you know, and he just happened to be a cook at this point in his life.
Right. And I'll say, I'll offer that another emotional chord that resonates with me is that there are a lot of characteristics of Dex that remind me of my father. And it was, Dex actually became a touchstone for me and my dad when Attack of the Clones came out, because he was that classic sort of character that my dad would have latched onto when I was a kid from the original Star Wars movies. And I think that that's why Dex resonates, is he's like one of those weird characters that you would have met on the side. But after the movie was over, after you were like, oh, I can't believe they did this, I can't believe they did that, you'd be like, oh, yeah. And Dexter Jetster, like, he's, I still have his action figure. Because he's just so much fun. So yes, I completely agree with you. We've stayed sort of prequel era. Who in the original trilogy would qualify for you?
Oh, that's a good question. And you know what's funny is that I don't have any original characters.
Really?
Original trilogy characters. But I do have, from The Force Awakens, of course, well, Sindon Anatho, or as we like to just call him because it's easier, the Crimson Corsair. And, you know, obviously he's on both of our lists. He's got to be there. We read the novel with him. That was just so much fun.
Okay.
So, you know, he, to me, was the side character in The Force Awakens where I was like, well, one, I've already gotten a great book with him, so I just kind of want more.
Yeah. So, it's so funny, though, because he actually didn't make my list. He didn't occur to me. I agree with you that he's a great side character because he follows that Star Wars tradition of somebody in the background who catches your eye, mm-hmm. where the design is so cool that you're like, oh, who is that guy? So even if you haven't read the novel, you're like, whoa, I need to know more about that guy. He's so
Well, one of the few times, too, in that film, in that scene, in that cantina, that you actually slow down enough to see a character. So, you know, because J.J. moves the camera so fast in that scene, it's hard to really, mm-hmm. I mean, you barely linger on any of the creature creations. He's one of the few, those two at the table, that you actually get an opportunity to like, oh, that's what they look like, instead of it feeling more like it's just kind of a blur.
Okay. I think that's a fair note. I do. I do think that's a fair note because J.J. does like to move the camera around a lot, but if we're in that cantina, somebody who did make my list that jumps out is mm-hmm. Maz Kanata. Because
Maz
completely embodies, again, getting back to the Dex sort of thing, Maz is a character that completely embodies that Lucas sense of rich side characters where after the movie was over, you walked out and you said, this was neat, and did you get a load of Maz Kanata? And I think that it's amazing because she is a CG character. I think that the sensibilities about and concerning CG characters are embodied by Maz Kanata because she would have been dismissed 5 or 10 years ago as, oh, just another CG creature. But now the technology and the performance has gotten to the point where people aren't immediately dismissive of CG. They're willing to go along with it.
Right. I mean, and thankfully we have Gollum to thank for that. You know, we have Andy Serkis and turning that into a performance art, you know. So I think that's one of the things. And what was great is that he was a part of, you know, The Force Awakens and helping them craft and understand how to do performance capture in this way because, you know, that's really something that Weta pioneered. And so, yes, ILM has been using it, but I think him coming in to teach people how to really get in the spirit of and that it is a form of acting really made a difference, you know. Didn't help Snoke, but it did really help the Maz Kanata character. So
I think that character design, you know, works against Snoke a little bit, but I think you hit on it where ILM always had the technical capacity for it, and this even speaks to, you know, a recognized, I don't want to use the word failing, but sometimes a shortcoming with Lucas of not being an actor's director. Like, I think having somebody, like you said, like Serkis or even Abrams willing to talk to the actor portraying the CG character as an acting role as opposed to be in this scene and we'll fill in the details later. You know, like Maz Kanata is not just a vehicle for technology.
Right.
Maz Kanata is a character who would have worked whether she was CG or whether they just put put the actress in,
yep,
you know, makeup. It would have worked equally well. So okay. So I'm fascinated though that you don't have original trilogy side characters on there. Do you think that that's a function of being too used to the original trilogy, and so sort of the luster has worn off such that you don't get captivated by them in the same way? Or is it just that you think that the cogs work in the machine in a different way than in the prequels and in The Force Awakens?
That's a good question. I don't know what it is that causes me not to necessarily think so much about the original trilogy. And maybe it is because it's so ingrained at this point, you know, especially with Star Wars being almost 40 years old. It's just been there for so long in my life that, you know, all the characters kind of run together, you know. Whether they're side characters or not, I don't really necessarily think of it. But, you know, I'd say, too, one of the things is the prequels got the opportunity to really dive into more side characters because we got the Clone Wars series, and that really helped. And, you know, the Force Awakens, too, had a lot of things before the movie came out where we were looking at side characters specifically in books and making them interesting, you know, and bringing them to light, you know. And so the original trilogy, yes, it's had its stories, but when you took all of that EU away, they're slowly building back into more of the side characters now.
That's interesting because so – and this is not a knock, but an observation. It seems to me that when you're rating your side characters, with the exception of, say, for instance, Maz Kanata or something like that, you're moving outside the text of the episodes 1 through 7. You're incorporating the backup text, the expanded universe stuff to go into that. And again, that's not a knock. I'm just trying to, because I think my criteria were a little bit different approaching it. And so I would love to find out what your complete criteria were for qualifying these characters.
I think it was anyone in, for me, really, it was anybody on screen. So whether that was on TV or on film, you know, and the only person I think that was truly helped by ancillary materials was the Crimson Corsair. Otherwise, everybody else is you know, somebody that we've seen on screen, whether it was one of the TV shows or it was one of the 6 films or 7 films. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I didn't delve too much into the ancillary materials.
Okay.
But, it, you know, just original trilogy, I think, you know, side characters, you know, there's fun ones. You know, so I'm interested to see, did you pick anybody that stood out to you really as a side character?
I did.
In the original
trilogy? I did. Nine Nub. I've been fascinated with that character since I was a child because
liked that character, so that's interesting.
Yeah, my gosh, he was so much fun, and the fact that it was non-subtitled and mm-hmm. you know you had to like go along with it. Like Nine Nub was, I think that face, even though it doesn't move like a mask, even though all that moves is the mouth really, and you know the eyes, you know, blink a little bit and everything like that, but like. It's so Nine Nub just captured me from childhood and he still has me. Like I see him come up on screen and it's just, there's something so joyous in the character design. I know that sounds weird, but it just like, I smile every time I see him. I don't know whether that's because of some ingrained memory trigger that I have from seeing the movie or something like that. But every time I see Nine Nub or even hear him, I love seeing and listening to him. And even though it was such a cheap fan callback, I loved seeing him in the Force Awakens. I did, because that, you know, that was the attack vector for me, was like, oh, and look, Nine Nub. And I was like, yay, Nine Nub's on screen. Like, it, as weird as it sounds, like that little bit was enough to sort of soften my heart a little bit. So Nine Nub wouldn't have made your list?
No, I wouldn't have thought of him, but you know, when I'm thinking through the original trilogy, you know, somebody for me that I really liked, you know, a couple of people. One was Admiral Akbar,
yes.
And I think he's really, really interesting character and makes you want to know more about him just because of his presence on screen.
Yep.
That and Mon Mothma, you know, when I'm just thinking original trilogy, I think she was such a mysterious character, and the way that she was played, she had this strange ethereal quality to her, especially when she's talking about how many Bothans died. You know, like,
right.
There's such regret in her voice. It feels like there's such a story and a history there that you kind of want to know more about. So I think those two, and really it's Return of the Jedi that makes those people come to the forefront. So otherwise, you know, the original trilogy is very small, you know, when you think about it.
In a sense.
It has a much more tight feel to it. The universe feels much smaller and not quite as expansive because you're telling a very focused story.
Right.
So that's a very strange and interesting thing to me, but I kind of love it, you know.
So long as you're mentioning Ackbar and Mothma and we're talking about Return of the Jedi, General Madine actually made my list.
Yeah. Okay.
But
yeah.
Do you know why? Because that haircut has driven me nuts since I was a child. Nine Nub always made me smile.
Oh, yeah.
But his haircut
you didn't
makes
like
no
the 70s,
sense to me.
Like comb over thing
that
he had going
that
on.
Haircut is all sorts of wrong. I want them to go in with CG and fix that hair, man. That is all. And as a bit of history for anybody that doesn't know, General Madine was actually supposed to be in basically the Ackbar role during the fight. They didn't know whether the puppet for Ackbar was going to translate well on screen. And so he was actually written to deliver a lot of those lines about, you know, may the force be with us and the fleet flying off and stuff like that. But Ackbar obviously wound up working on screen. But there was actually I think it appears in the novelization, but I know that there was a sequence that they shot for. I mean, you know, typical Lucas, they shot tons of stuff and made it all in the editing bay. But right. There was a scene where Madine was the one who drove his ship into, I believe it was the Super Star Destroyer, to destroy it.
But
they changed it and turned it into the A-Wing to tighten the plot line. So,
oh, wow.
I believe that it was a Super Star Destroyer, but I know that there was a sequence where he flew his ship into another ship to destroy it.
Wow. That's kind of cool. Huh.
I've only seen one photograph from it, though. Only one.
Okay, I gotta ask you about this one, because next on my list is again something I have a ton of people from the Clone Wars, but for me, somebody who became really important was Satine.
Oh,
and I
yeah.
know that she was controversial for some people, but for me, I loved the character. I loved the voice work too, and she's a wonderful voice actress. Follow her on Twitter. Actually interacted with her a few times. She's very nice, Anna Graves. And that character to me was just utterly fascinating for what, you know, she stood for, what she was trying to do. But then, of course, her connection with Obi-Wan Kenobi, and you put all of that together, I just thought it was really unique for Star Wars, you know, to have a female character like this. And I think she turned out to be one of the more interesting female characters, and Clone Wars, on a whole, tended to be, I think, the best place for female characters in Star Wars. We had so many good ones come out of that series. So I don't know. What did you end up thinking about her? Was she somebody you liked? Did you hate the idea?
Oh, no. I loved Satine. I think we might have spoken about this in some forum somewhere, but the idea that if Anakin had just spoken to Obi-Wan, Obi-Wan could have laid bare. And it'll always be a question for me. I'd love for them to explore of why didn't Obi-Wan truly share everything he went through with Satine to give Anakin that grounding perspective. Like, you would think that the Master Padawan bond would have been such that there would have been zero secrets for them and there would have been no surprise about Satine showing up. It would have been more like, oh, yeah, you told me about her. I get it. And you almost have to wonder with Satine, her introduction to the series makes you wonder if Obi-Wan had just been a little bit more open with Anakin, whether things would have gone differently. But I agree with you. I think Satine was a fascinating character, and to use a fascinating female character as a way to provide more backstory and weight to the whole Mandalorian arc and explanation for who they were and the splits in there, you know, in their culture and everything, it actually speaks to, because it ties into one of my favorite prequel side characters of Jango Fett, the character who rehabbed Boba Fett mm-hmm. for me.
Yeah.
But the simple fact is that it's really the first time that it explosively for me illustrated that not every civilization was monocultural or in mm-hmm. agreement. Like, one of the things that I've knocked Star Trek for over time is that every planet they meet, it's a global society and everybody's in agreement.
Right.
Whereas when you get to Mandalore and you get to Satine, her character is so rich and interesting because it shows a leader who's trying to manage expectations with her own people mm-hmm. who aren't happy yep. about things that are being done. And so I agree with you. Her character is very deep, very fascinating. That's a great choice.
Yeah, thank you. I thought that she was such an interesting character. And then, of course, you know, I think one of there are a few moments throughout the Clone Wars where tears, you know, will kind of well up a little bit. And one of them is her death. And
oh, yeah, very powerful.
It's very powerful. And so, all of that together, I think she is just an incredible character.
Well, and the thing is, though, you talk about the resolution with her character. That actually reminds me of a Clone Wars character that I adore to this day. I actually have this figure, too, staring over me right now. But didn't get the type of resolution or even further development that I wanted, and that's Cad Bane. I loved the character
yes.
of Cad Bane.
Oh, what a character.
He was just wonderful. You know, it frustrates me that he wasn't utilized more as the series went forward.
He is hands down, I think, the coolest, best bounty hunter.
Agree.
And mainly, think about this. He's the one bounty hunter that we actually see do the job that he's hired to do most of the time. He
right.
almost never fails when we see him in the Clone Wars, whereas any other time we're seeing bounty hunters fail.
Well, he's the one bounty hunter that we
done.
See. He's the one bounty hunter we see go up against a Jedi, or
oh, yeah.
much less multiple Jedi, that's like, yep, I can do this. Don't worry about it. Like, I mean, in a sense, Jango has that same air about him. He's willing to just, he's like, whatever, Jedi, I can handle it. But of course, his end is quick and sad. But like, Cad Bane is the one that has no fear and continually outsmarts and gets away. Like, he's a smart character. I like him. He's a good villain.
I didn't even think about him, but I can't believe I didn't, because every time that he had an episode, I really liked. And what I liked is that he had an arc that had him going forward of not always being just the quote-unquote bad guy, you know? Like,
right.
There was a lot more to him as a character. And I really, really enjoyed seeing that. So.
Well, he was the old gunslinger. You know, he was, he would do the contract. He didn't care about any moral ambiguities in the contract, but mm-hmm. it was the contract. He wasn't going to go outside it and do something nasty just to be nasty. He was hired for a job, and that was what he was going to do. And actually speaking, since you brought up, you know, female characters getting so much more attention and development in the Clone Wars series, that ties right into Ara Sing,
who was wonderfully
developed in the Clone Wars series. Mm-hmm. You know, go from a single shot background character to somebody with an expansive history. It actually winds up making her an even cooler. I mean, I still remember when Phantom Menace came out and all of the speculation about her character, even though mm-hmm. she is literally in one single shot of the Phantom
yeah.
Menace.
Yes.
Like, she had a fan following. You know, which speaks, I guess, to the strength of all of the side characters that, you know, mm-hmm. and why we're talking about them. But
yep.
who have we missed for you so far? Who makes the cut that we haven't had any attention given to them yet?
I think one of the biggest characters is Asajj Ventress.
Yep, right there.
I think, yeah.
There you go.
I mean, and we've talked about her before, but, you know... especially, I think about when we talked with Nick Anastasio on the Clone Wars episode we did for the 602 Club, and you know the fact that her arc and Ahsoka's arc mirror each other, and they are much closer together by the end than they are separate, I think is fascinating. And they both feel like they get betrayed by their masters in the end. They both actually come more towards being somewhere in the middle with the Force than you know, on mm-hmm. light or dark. You know, and she's just an incredibly well-written, well-done character. And her arc is one of my favorite things about, you know, the storyline. And you know, sad that it does end up the way it does in Dark Disciple, but I was so thankful that we actually got her storyline.
Absolutely agree. Yeah. And let's take the moment to say Dark Disciple by Christy Golden is a must-read if you're a Star Wars fan. We have to say that. And especially if you watch the Clone Wars and the series came to an end and you were always wondering where Asajj Ventress went from there, you have to read the book. It's wonderfully written, incredibly compelling, and much like some of the other books that we've talked about in other forums, like, it's a book that, even if it weren't a Star Wars book, works. And so I highly recommend that. For me, the character that we missed is the character that, for me, gives the First Order a lot of weight and purpose that otherwise wasn't covered sufficiently in The Force Awakens, and that's going to be General Hux. I think that I give that character a lot of love, and I think it's justified because Hux is so brilliantly portrayed by Domhnall Gleeson. You can see that fiery devotion to an insane cause.
Yes.
And realize when you interact with him, there's no talking him out of it. There's no moment where you're going to have, you know what, maybe we're not so different, you and me. No.
Yeah.
It's
no.
Kill or be killed with Hux, period. And I love that. I love that type of character. If anything, he fulfills the promise of Tarkin. He's a spiritual descendant of Tarkin. Obviously, he serves similar in the, you know, in the great grand hierarchy, but Tarkin is older and you have the sense of, like, you know, I'm playing the bureaucratic game. I'm in it for my own gain and I'm devoted to the Empire, but it's just, you know, it's because it's what I do and I'm part of the military. Whereas Hux would be this fanatical about the First Order, even if he wasn't a general. You know, if he was just a guy that lived on a First Order planet, he'd be the guy turning in his neighbors for not saying nice things about Snoke, you know? And that's what I love about the character.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. He's really somebody that I want to see more of.
Oh, gosh, I want him to have an expanded role in Episode 8. Absolutely.
Yeah, I'd be very interested. And I think he will, you know. And I think having the schism a little bit between him and, you know, Kylo Ren is really something that'll be interesting to see, because obviously with Tarkin and Vader, we had that, but we don't get to see it on screen, really.
Right.
We only kind of get, in the Tarkin book. It's not a great book, so... but that's really the only place I feel like we kind of have that back and forth between those two. So, I think they have the opportunity to do that in Episode 8, and I kind of think that we will see it as, you know, I think Hux thinks him and his army are what needs to be the thing. And,
right. You
know, obviously Kylo Ren feels like, well, no, it needs to be me and the Force and everything else and what we're doing with the Knights of Ren. So that's going to be fascinating to see. And for me, the one person that we haven't mentioned that, especially from the new trilogy, that Poe is really a side character.
Oh, yeah. You're right.
But he, to me, was... I mean, next to Rey, he was the thing I loved most about Force Awakens. Poe is fantastic. And the way he's played, the way he's written, everything about that character just hums. It just works. And I really just want to see more of Poe.
So you feel that it's a combination of performance and writing that makes Poe compelling, not just performance. Because I would go so far as to say, especially because they had originally written it to kill Poe in the first act, I really think it's performance that really drives it, because he's obviously inserted in the final battle to give him a purpose and stuff like that. Like from a technical writing standpoint, like they're like, this character is no longer this. It's going to be Poe now. Like, I do think it's the performance. It's Oscar Isaac is such an electric performer that you can't help but get that charisma. Like, it just bleeds off screen. But you feel that it's a good balance of writing and portrayal?
Well, I feel like the scene that sells the character is really the big scene that you see him in with another character, and that's when he's with Finn and they're going to escape, and the electricity that they're both bringing to that. I think, you know, the thought of like losing Poe after that, it seems anticlimactic. It seems like, no, we just need more of this character, not less, because he has such a great chemistry with his co-stars.
Yeah.
And part of that, I think, is that they're both just having a good time. And it reminds you of the best of any of the Star Wars films, you know, and any of the best Star Wars relationships.
And you know what I originally bashed, and there's audio record of this, what I originally bashed about the performance, but I've since come to warm up to, is that there really is so much portrayed, and I believe this is an ad lib that he came up with, but there is so much conveyed about Poe when he is brought before Kylo Ren, who has just frozen a blaster bolt in the air, and he doesn't act afraid. He's not defiant even. He's just dismissive of Kylo Ren. He's like, so how does this work? Do you talk? Do I talk? I can't tell with all of the mask stuff going. When I first saw that, I was like, ugh, this sort of undercuts Kylo Ren. But I've since warmed up to it, and I think it goes so far as to convey a lot of that charisma we're talking about, of a guy that if he's going to die right now, and he's got to be expecting to die, he's like, yeah, you know what? Fine. I'm going to die. Who cares? Bring it. You know, like, and I think there's a lot of interesting swagger to that comment. I don't know if you've since warmed up to it. And I think it's okay if people haven't. But for me, just over time, I've warmed up to it.
Yeah, no, I have always actually liked that line. I always thought it was fun. And I think the thing that for me that really got me thinking, just as a crazy Star Wars fan, because this is what we do, does Poe know who Kylo Ren is? And is that why he's so flippant with him? Like, he knows who Kylo Ren is, and he knows that it's Ben. You know, I mean, he works so closely with Leia.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem like there would be a ton of secrets there. So, and I have no idea. That's just speculation. But to me, that makes that scene make a lot of sense, that Poe understands who it is under the mask, and that's why he's taunting him, and especially about, it's hard to understand with all this apparatus, you know, like, bro, you don't need that, so quit fronting.
Well, you know what, I gotta tell you, I will be completely honest, that a discussion about side characters is so illuminating, because it really does speak to the fun and the depth and the even for people who are dismissive of the prequels, I think even they have to admit that really the side characters are so much fun and so interesting to behold, to look at, even from just from a character design standpoint, but also from what they add to the story and the idea of richness and everything. So I've really enjoyed this conversation. So Matt, if people want to reach out to you and, you know, support your choices, offer suggestions, where can they find you online?
Well, you can find me a few different places. Of course, I am on Twitter at MattRushing02. You can find me on Instagram at MRushing. You can also find me on the Trek FM network. I do a few shows there. I'm on The Orb with Christopher Jones, where we talk exclusively about Deep Space Nine. So if you liked my allusions to how this can compare to Star Trek, check out The Orb. You can also hear me on Literary Treks, which is our books and comics show there on the Trek FM network. I get also the great opportunity to be there with Dan Gunther and Bruce Gibson. We talk about all things literary Treks. And of course, we also get to interview the authors, which is a lot of fun. And we had a very special author from the Nerd Party Network and also from the Trek FM network, Tristan Riddell, on our 150th episode. So I think everybody should go check that out, even if you just want a really unique experience. I think it's worth checking out. And then I do the General Geek Show there, which is everything not Star Trek. We talk about all our favorite fandoms there. It's so much fun. So check out the 602 Club for more great times about other great fandoms, even Star Wars. And now, John, before I get where everybody can find you, there's a couple of places you can just find the show. We're on the nerdparty.com.
We're also on Twitter at The Jedi Masters. And you can also find The Nerd Party on Twitter. And that's at Join Nerd Party. And, of course, we are on Facebook at facebook.com/The Nerd Party. So all the places that you can find us on the show, feel free to join us old school wise through some email. And that's an@thenerdparty.com. So now, John, I know you're tons of places online. So make sure that if they want to interact with you about your choices or maybe somebody you missed or maybe they just love your choices and they have nothing to complain about, which that would be unique. Where can they find you?
Oh, Kessel Junkie. Find your social network of choice. Primarily, I'm hanging around on Twitter, mainly harassing Matt. And you can also find me on two other podcasts. The first is Stage 9 on the Trek FM network, which is a rebooted look at the Star Trek creators and what they've done outside of the Star Trek universe. Our focus right now, obviously, is going to be on the people that are coming up with the new Star Trek series as we ramp up for that. And it's my pleasure to co-host that with Mike Schindler. And then there is Words with Nerds, which I co-host with my pal Craig. And we cover just about every topic that you can imagine in the geek universe and beyond. So that's where you can find me, and they know where they can find you, and they know where they can find the Nerd Party. So Matthew, I think right now it might be time to close negotiations.
John, negotiations are closed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.